Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. It is Saturday morning, so we have some open lines. If you've got a question other than what we're talking about, feel free to give us a call, and we'll try to address any questions you might have on air. Otherwise, you can always give me a call or drop me a line at diane@wecanprepare.org. We've been talking about tithing versus giving, and we've been looking specifically at what the scriptures say. So many people use the scriptures as a justification for tithing in one way, shape, or form, that we're looking specifically at what the scriptures say. And what we're finding out, hopefully, is that the scriptures do not say what we have been taught that they say and what we've been relying on them to say. When we let them speak for themselves about this topic, we come away with a totally different perception. We've gotten up to looking at Malachi. And again, we're going through not only looking at tithing versus giving first, but tithing versus tithe. That the word tithe is used in two different ways. There is the word tithe used as a tenth, which is merely a fraction of something else. It's a number. A tithe of 100 cows is 10 cows. Not that complicated. Then there's also to tithe, which is a verb, which is an action. And that is, we're finding strictly a part of the law. So it only applies under the law that we, so many of us have been taught that tithing is something that was before the law and after the law. And what we're finding out is that that's not the case, that the distinction between the law and pre-law and post-law is that under the law, there were very specific requirements to fulfill all the law. And that it was not just about, and never intended to be, about picking and choosing which aspect of the law is good to fulfill. That there's one part of the law that if you do one part, you will receive blessings. The law is always a package deal. That was the whole purpose of the law. That if you fail in fulfilling any aspect of the law, you have failed in all. This is one of the reasons we're spending so much time in Malachi, because there's that one verse in there about bringing all the tithes into the storehouse and see if God won't bless your socks off, so much so that you won't be able to contain it. And that's used to get people to donate to the church, to ministries, to anything, to God. But what we find out is that that is completely taken out of context, in the sense that Malachi is a list, a complete list at that particular historical moment, Malachi is God's list of grievances against Israel. You can't pick and choose part of it to be what you want to follow and get the consequences of, get the value of. And I do want to let you know Blog Talk Radio is having some technical difficulties, so if you're having problems connecting in any way or trying to call through, it's not you. But Malachi is a list of God's grievances and his blessings and curses are associated with the entire list. In the original, there were no verses, there were no chapters. Now, it was written poetically and presented poetically, but it was not presented the way we have it presented. It was presented in a much more of a build, one precept, one concept built literally on the previous. So it was a summation that if Israel turned from their wicked ways, then God would bless them. And if they did all the law and fixed all their problems, and the last thing that they were supposed to fix was to bring their tithes in, then God would bless them. So it wasn't just one thing, it was a full summary of everything. So we want to look at piece by piece. We've gone through and read all of Malachi, all four chapters, but we're going to look at God's list in plain English. And again, this is his list not only against the people of Israel, but especially the priests, the leaders. And this is, again, one of those areas where we want to follow someone and let them take responsibility for us. Likewise, we want very often to be leaders, but we don't want to lead by following God. We want to lead by according to our own strength. So we're going to look at what are the complaints God has against his people and against his leaders. We're going to start in Malachi chapter 1. And again, he's just jumping right in and listing his grievances against Israel, why he has let Israel fall to idolatry, to their enemies, basically what are his complaints against Israel. First, in chapter 1, verses 1 through 5, he lists the great, and gives examples of great ingratitude and arrogance. Verse 6 is insolence, rebellion, contempt, neglect, and hypocrisy of the priesthood. Verse 7 is contempt, greed, disobedience to the law, creating law unto themselves, and that their deeds reveal their hearts. Verse 8, they have offered unacceptable sacrifices. They have lowered God's standards. They think it's okay to serve God part way and make up other rules as it suits them. Verse 9, their priests are deceptive to people and to God, which causes evil to come upon the people. So God rejects them, since they are covetous and wicked. Verse 10, the Levites didn't do their jobs. They thought that God either wouldn't see, or wouldn't care. God rejects them and their offering. Verse 11, because of the rebellion of both the people and the priests, God rejects his favored nation and promises to make his name great among the Gentiles, who will offer a pure offering. Right smack dab in the middle of the first chapter of Malachi, he foreshadows an end to all these legal ceremonies, pointing to the fulfillment of Christ's sacrifice alone. Verse 12, he speaks of the neglect by both priests and people, their disobedience, impiety, their contempt of God, and covetousness. Verse 13, their laziness, their pride in service, that's a big one, lukewarmness, greed, keeping the best for themselves. Verse 14, lying, breaking of vows, lack of fear of the Lord. That's just chapter 1. He has a lot to say about his priesthood failing to represent him to the people, and in turn, he rejects them. And their response is always, how have we done this? And so he gives some examples that, of course, they don't want to hear. Malachi chapter 2, verse 1. He rebukes the priests. Verse 2, God threatens to continue the curse and increase it if they continue to refuse to hear. They refuse to take it to heart and give glory to him. God condemns their motivations. Not just that the sacrifices are unacceptable, but that they are not rightly motivated out of appreciation and love. They are doing it for self-gratification, trying to buy God's blessings. So God promises lack, regardless of their actions, and promises filth and shame as consequences of their disobedient feasts. Verse 4, God upholds the rightness of his covenant while rejecting those that abuse it. Verse 5, God reminds them of his promise of life and peace to Levi. All they had to do was serve him according to his word. In other words, with respect and fear. God compares the current priesthood to righteous Levi, the original priest, who spoke the truth, had it in his heart, and taught it to others. In verse 7, the priests were reproved for not being righteous representatives of the Lord. When any one of us misrepresents God, we are especially making ourselves vulnerable, because we are putting ourselves out there as his representatives, and yet adding to the burden of people. When we tell anyone that in order for God to bless them, they need to tithe, or that the reason they're having financial struggles is because they haven't given enough, or they haven't tithed, or anything, we are misrepresenting God. And when we, if we want to live by the law, we will die by the law. If we want to try to have a relationship with God, God will judge us, or the law judges us according to the law. So it's the rules. If you want to live according to those rules, you have to fulfill all of them, not just the ones that are convenient or self-serving. Verse 8, priests are stumbling blocks and have corrupted the law. God caused the priests to be despised by the people because they dealt unjustly with them and not according to the justice that was in the law. They took advantage of the people, and they tried to take advantage of the Lord as well. Verse 11, God describes the profanity and marriage with foreign wives, which led his people into idolatry. And the priest said nothing. So the Lord promises to cut off those who deal deceitfully, yet believe they are okay with God because they bring him offerings. When we think we're okay because we tithe, or because we go to church, or for any other reason, we think we're okay. And we are relying on our own actions. There will be consequences according to the law, because we're choosing the law as a standard. And by choosing the law as a standard, we are rejecting God. And he says, if that's the game you want to play, I'm always here. You can turn to me at any time. But he lets us fail. He lets us try it that way, because he knows the law will not satisfy. The law will fail. It was meant to, because we are not able to fulfill it. And that's its purpose, to prove that the law cannot change us. Only rebirth, only knowing God, only being born again as spirit changes us. We've talked so many times, so often, about the purpose of God creating a people here on this earth and then separating himself. It wasn't so he could prove how great he was, or how powerful, or that he knew that there was, you know, sin in the heart of his own creation. No, it was so he could, so we would be appreciative. So we would appreciate and accept and receive his free gifts, who he is truly. Again, our definition of grace is accepting unconditionally what God gives unconditionally and just say thanks. We want to work for ourselves and get credit for our own works. And God will not do it that way. Which brings us to verse 13. Ignorance of God's ways. That restoration, all it will take is crying out to Him to get Him to bless them once again. Asking, Lord, help. God explains this curse because they broke the laws of marriage, a part of the covenant. God exhorts to self-control and acting wisely. He hates divorce, which had become acceptable even among the priests. They murmured against God, accusing Him of not hearing because He didn't come when called. They interpreted His timing as favoring the wicked, that He was ignorant of their actions, so pushed their behavior to the limits to see how far they could go, how much they could get away with before God would intervene. In other words, again, He's showing how they did not have the desire to please God. They wanted to see how far they could get away with things. When will God intervene in our behavior? Well, and we misinterpret that if He's not saying anything, it must be okay. So pretty clear, so much of this is exactly what we experience ourselves. He also charges them with blasphemy against His sovereignty and against His righteousness. Again, He's listing item by item His complaints against His people and saying, how can you expect me to bless you simply because you go through the motions? Next, in chapter 3, verse 1, God outlines His solution to the problem, promising His messenger, John the Baptist, His coming as Messiah and the maker and keeper of the covenant, which was the fulfiller of the law, Christ. Now, when Christ came, He didn't fulfill part of the law. If He did, we would still be under it. But we can't have it both ways. We can't be under grace and under law. Some want to have a balance that in order to keep us from going off the deep end, you have to have some law. Now, part of that is they don't understand the difference between the three realms of reality, the natural, the supernatural, and the spiritual. But the law does not apply to spirit. Spirit created the law. Second verse is the hypocrites will get what they thought they wanted. And the Messiah will begin His judgment with those who abused his people. God himself will purify and purge his priests. He will then accept their offering, which brings, the coming of the Messiah brings a new kind of priesthood. And this is, again, we love the typology in the Old Testament and the symbolism and the foreshadowing. But that's what it is. It's typology and foreshadowing and symbology. And when the reality of what that those foreshadowings and the symbols and the types, when the reality is present here on earth, why do we cling to the typology and the symbols and the references, the signposts? It's as if we know the Christmas story of where the star and the angels appeared to the shepherds and said, "The Prince of Peace is born. Go to Nazareth. Go to Bethlehem. Find the little baby. He is the newborn king." And if instead of doing that, they just went around and said, "We saw an angel. We saw an angel. We saw all these angels." We get fascinated by what we see, what we hear, and we fail to respond to what God is doing, the reality. We don't act on what he tells us to do. So we want to recognize that as we go through this process, we see ourselves likewise trying to see how far we can go, trying to see what we can get away with, trying to find a way to get God to be accountable on our terms, that we're going to do things our way, that we're going to come up with our own ways of dealing with him. So that we will basically create our own God. We will create him in our likeness, in our image, and we will pick and choose which aspects of the law we want to continue in. We will pick and choose what part of the law we want to fulfill. And we will pick and choose what areas we will allow God to hold us accountable to. But God will not allow that to continue indefinitely. He knows what's best for you, and he knows what he has in store for you. And he will not let you continue to do things on your own terms, in your own way. His desire is for you to be able to accept fully everything he has for you. And he will do whatever it takes to accomplish that. So we'll continue next Saturday in discussing Malachi. We're again in chapter 3. If you have any questions, again, you can email me at diane@weCanPrepare.org. You're always welcome to visit our website at weCanPrepare.org. And remember, the archives are available to check out previous, not only tithing, the tithing series, but the other series as well. to get a better understanding of the foundations, the fundamentals of so much of what we're talking about. We appreciate you tuning in, especially on Saturdays. We also get together on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, and we are looking at alternatives, especially when Blog Talk Radio has these kinds of technical difficulties, make it kind of hard to interact. So we will hopefully be working that out and clarifying that soon. So thanks for tuning in. This has been Diane Thomas of Prepare Radio. Have a great rest of the weekend.